This week's episode of Probably Science is brought to you by 229 and Beyond, our weekend of science, stand-up, and stargazing happening in 29 Palms, California, at the newly opened Outpost 29. And you can visit 229andbeyond.com, that's T-O-29andbeyond.com, for discounted early bird weekend passes. You can be there June 7th and 8th to see all the fun. We have the comedy legend Bobcat Goldthwaite headlining the event, which I can't believe. It's going to be so fun. He's going to be doing stand-up, as will Matt, Jesse, and myself. And he will also be guesting on one of the tapings of Probably Science. We'll also have returning guest Farah Alibay, who works for NASA JPL and has been a part of multiple Mars landings and has an incredible upcoming project she'll tell us about at the event. But we have much more than that as well. We have karaoke. We have live music from Albert Hickman of Albert and His Dreamboats. We have trivia hosted by yours truly, and I swear I won't bring up Jeopardy too many times. And of course, we have guided stargazing courtesy of Skywatcher Star Tours. We're very excited to have them as a sponsor. And if you're in the area at another point and want to have a private tour with them, you can use the code 29BEYOND to get 15% off of a tour if you visit sky-watcher.com. This event's going to be super fun. On May 10th, the ticket prices go up when we announce more of the lineup. We've got even more comics coming on board, and it's going to be a packed weekend. You can stay at the hotel adjacent to Outpost 29. That's called Oasis Inn and Suites. You can find info on our website and tell them we sent you to get a discounted rate. You can just stumble back to your room at the end of a night of comedy, science, and stargazing. Also, big thanks to Caitlin Gill, who built our website, and to Merch Kitchen for their sponsorship. And of course, Visit 29, who are doing a great job of investing in events like this to bring more tourists to 29 Palms. They provided us with a generous grant, and we thank them for that very much. On with the show, and we hope to see you in a few weeks in the high desert.
Probably Science.
Hello, and welcome to Probably Science. I'm Andy Wood.
I'm Jesse Case.
I'm Matt Kirshen, and we're joined over the internet, but with someone who's just around the corner from me right now, but is normally on the other side of the country or the world from me. This is far too much geographical
this
information.
This is so complicated out of the gate.
So needlessly complex.
Just drop three words and finish it. Yeah,
let's see. Yeah, we can tell you exactly. Yeah, we should all give our what three words at the beginning so people know exactly not just where we're living, but which part of the building we're currently in.
Yeah, which square meter.
Yeah, which couch am I on?
Yes.
It is, by the way, I know Coachella is happening around now. It is the best thing for festivals. I don't know why it's not more widely spread at festivals. Last time I was at Glastonbury, which is a few years ago now, it was game changer. Absolute game changer. Compared
it's
to
Beck
previous-
Hill, everybody.
Is, yes, is who's yeah, with I'm us. The it's game changer at Coachella.
No, I can always tell when it's about to devolve into a 5 minutes about something else. We've done that to so many guests where we're about to introduce them and then we're like, and you know, but KitchenAid mixer is a good mixer. Yeah. And then they just sit there while we talk about kitchens.
I did say Beck's name at some point in the preamble, but that is an absolutely fair point, Jesse. And thank you for stopping me from spending
No, it's no problem.
What is talking this? About.
What's this? What three words? I haven't heard of this.
Wait, no.
I really haven't. I don't.
Come on.
I'm not trying to be a Luddite, all right?
This is one of my three things that, like, when I first mentioned it to someone, they're like, shut up, you dork. And then, like, a month later, they're like, okay. And those three things are turning off motion smoothing on your TV.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Splitwise for anything where you have any shared expenses at all, especially travel.
Don't know what that is.
And what three words? Well, anytime you're doing anything with more than just you, just Splitwise. Like, I do this thing every summer in Tahoe with like 15 guys, the swimming relay race. And it used to be a weeks long process afterwards of spreadsheets and such to figure out how to settle up all the expenses. I'm like, guys, someone thought of this. It's an app called Splitwise. You have to do zero work. At the end, you click settle
anytime
up.
Anytime someone pays for something. We used it with our family when we were traveling together. And yeah, if someone buys dinner or whatever, someone picks up a tab, rather than working out there and then, you just put in what you've paid for and who it's being split with within the group. Because you could do like you can go like, this was just me and these two other people who had dinner. Mm. And you're like, I paid for it. And then at the end of the trip, it just tells you who owes what and how to settle it. It'll be like, all right,
in the fewest transactions necessary.
Wow.
Yeah. The kind of stuff you then try to work out and add an extra layer of complication to normally, where you're like, okay, you give me you give me $20 and then I give you back.
But what about this stuff though? Like if you covered it, but they had expensive drinks and you had water. You see what I'm saying?
If you're going to be that cheap, don't even bother. But like, if it's in general, it's like we're renting a house for the weekend. We're renting a
Jesse,
boat.
Jesse, it's Tahoe. Yeah. All right? We're not counting drinks.
As I pop my collar.
It's Tahoe,
and if
baby.
You want a 1 month free trial of Splitwise, use your code, probably science.
Hashtag privilege.
No, I was just wondering if it got into that.
I mean, you can, there are things it can do, but for the most part, it's like, for this expense, I just tag all the people who, like, groceries for the house, okay, the boat we're all on, that's the six people in the boat.
I'm always struggling to find people to pay for my boat.
Me too. It's splitting up boat costs is brutal.
Wait, you split the boat costs? You don't just pay for them?
A gentleman pays for his
boat. You ask other people to pitch in for the boat? God,
of course I pay the boat costs, but then there's docking fees, the marina fees.
How else is he supposed to stay afloat? Ayo!
Yeah. Exactly.
But then it also links directly to Venmo and PayPal and stuff, so it's like one button on the app and you've settled everything for the whole...
Okay, and then what... that sounds cool, and I'm gonna get it, and then what's this what three words? Who three...
Well, can I toot my own horn for a second before you say what it is? Because 10 years ago on the podcast... I don't know how it came up, but we were just lamenting that it's like using traditional like longitude and latitude is really cumbersome. And I even posited, I was like, you know, I think you wouldn't need that long of a string of just alphanumeric characters to differentiate every little square of land on Earth. And then I did some quick math and I was like, or actually you could just have like three words is probably enough. And then someone listening said, oh yeah, there's this thing called what three words. They've done that. Every 10 foot by 10 foot or 3 meter by 3 meters square on Earth has been given a unique set of three English words. And there might be other languages also, but those are immutable. They've been assigned once, they'll never change. So wherever you are, you open the app, you find your three words. If you're at the beach or something, any place without roads or even with roads, you want to say, come meet me at this exact spot. Here are the three words. And it's actually been a game changer in developing countries that don't have good or consistent addressing for emergency vehicles in like sub-Saharan Africa. Like tons of lives have been saved because here's my exact 10-foot square where I am.
Let me check my address. Hold on. Weird asymmetrical dick. This is horrible. I hate this. It's following me too. I went into the kitchen and it just said weird asymmetrical. Huh.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
And it's shouting it at you now. It's shouting it out.
Weird asymmetric. I mean,
But yeah, I'm looking now. I've just got the website open and it's opened on like central New York at New York City Hall. And a bit of the park next to City Hall is called Ruler Score Arch. And then a little bit just to the side of it is Deaf Port Invent. And Vine's Wink Rises. These are all part of Beard Cheese Reason. These are all parts of the same park.
All the words I use in Wordle.
Right.
Yeah. Beard, get it in four.
Beard cheese.
And we've had listeners write in and talk about how this has been a fun thing to do with scavenger hunts, because the solution to a thing can be the three words that will be the place you'll go for the next clue.
That's fun.
Or bar crawls. I think listeners have done that kind of stuff with it. In fact, might be a fun.
Yeah,
thing
it is
to
probably good
to...
for like a treasure. You can solve a puzzle, and then the solution to the puzzle is each of the words.
Yeah, right. The pirate industry is booming since then.
Yeah.
Gone are the days of an X on a map.
I don't want to commit.
Yeah, my location is Here Be Dragons. Is it? I don't know.
I don't want to be bound to this forever, but it might be a fun thing to do in 29 Palms in a couple of months for 229 and beyond, June 7th and 8th.
It is a good way to, yeah. Oh yeah, it's good thinking.
It'd be a daytime thing when it's kind of, it might be too hot out daytime, but I'll look at
it. Treasure hunt, twilight time, but yeah, it's really handy for festivals, because we used to have to, you know, if you're at one of the main stages at Glastonbury and there's 40,000 people, you kind of have to sort of triangulate with like, okay, see where the person is holding the flag with a picture of a dog on it. Okay, go between that and the cheese toasty stand. Draw a line there, and then I'm also in line with it. And it's a nightmare. And instead, you just give your what three words, and that'll get you to within, or either exactly where your friends are, or at least within sort of yelling distance of where your friends are.
Right.
It was so easy.
Wow.
I'm trying to find things
you think
that I've
saved. If they went up to four words, it would just be exact. Like, I mean,
it would change
exact as you want.
Every like, if you lean slightly to the left, it would change immediately.
Yeah.
Well, you can look. It's fun to look at your. I mean, fun is subjective, I guess. But
oh man, we're to look at your
own
now.
To look at your own house and try to find the best three words, because you'll probably have like 10 or so, or what, depending on the square footage, different options at your house of what squares.
Splitting I know I have boat costs. Got 10 squares in his house. This fucking guy.
Let me send you guys to a couple. Are you guys at whatthreewords.com right now?
I am.
Yes, I am.
I'm on my way.
Let me send you. Oh God damn it.
Does what three words equal one as well? Like, is what three words the location of their headquarters?
Oh my God. That's.
Oh, it should be.
Let's see. What dot three?
The Bin Laden compound. That's crazy.
What three words goes to that tree words? So they didn't. I think it was randomly assigned. They didn't think to be that clever with. I'm sorry. Also, combining our other privileged things, I use this to. If you go to afford recent flight, you will be at the final buoy that you have to turn at in Lake Tahoe for the relay race. Because I was telling everybody that all the rest of the boats have been taking a very circuitous route. So I was the one who was like a stickler for, we're drawing the straightest line. We're staying true to that line in the boat. We're going to save ourselves hundreds of yards. And halfway through the race, you can see that like most of the boats are a quarter mile or half mile north of us as we're traveling west. And everyone's like, all the rest of the boats are up there. Shouldn't we? I'm like, nope. Look at the line on what three words. We are on the truest course. They are all off course. Don't follow the mob.
Let's... Wait, so it's a boat race?
No, everyone swims, but there's six of you. So while one of you is swimming, five of you are in the boat next to the swimmer. So it's a relay race. Six people swim the width of Tahoe.
Is this like so a town can dance again? what's happening? You've done this. How long have you been doing this?
This will be my fourth year. It's all the guys. Okay. It's all guys from my college swim team of different ages. So for a while it was just one 6-person boat, and then they decided to add a second boat like 3 years ago, and then I joined. So now they're getting all these guys out of retirement. So we vary in range or in ages. There's like a 20-25 year age range, but all Cornell swimmers from like 80s through 2000s. So it's just been a fun excuse to like talk shit, and some of the guys are like getting in great shape. I was the slowest one last year. And there's also like the night before there's a big, the captains pick the teams and try to make the two boats equal. So it'll be a good race. And you have the sort of middle schooly, oh yeah. Okay, great. I was picked last. Awesome. What I can add to the team though, is being a stickler for taking the truest course across the lake, which will
and you brought Splitwise.
Yeah. I mean, I really did. I think I'm a net positive. And our team won last year, even though I was the slowest leg. I think, again, because we were staying true to the mission of straight line across the lake.
Yep.
Did you leave the TVs in the Airbnb in good shape?
The TVs?
I'm just going by the third of your things.
Turning off motion smoothing. Yeah. You got to turn off motion.
Look, he's slow as shit, but that TV, look, is a peach. And goddamn can he navigate.
When I'm in a bar and I see it, I'm like, you can't. No. Shut up, Andy. Don't. It's not someone's house. It's a bar. You can't turn on. You can't commandeer their dumb TV and make it. Like, there was a bar showing Pee-wee's Big Adventure after Pee-wee died, and it just looked like a telenovela because the smoothing. I'm like, just let me. The 40 people here watching it will love it so much more if we.
Do you think that's one?
That's
of those
what
weird,
he would have wanted.
Yeah.
Is that one of those weird things to get you to drink more? Where you're like, I'll have to turn it off the old fashioned way. Give me more booze. And then turn off this smoothing, you know? It's like how they keep like hot it's like all the little, if there are any bar snacks, they're always spicy. You know, it's a little selling extra beer. Beck, favorite race with your friends? Foot race or lake race? Go.
Three-legged.
Okay. Oh, solid choice.
That is a solid choice.
Thanks.
Did you guys ever do the thing where you had an egg and a
spoon? Oh, the egg and spoon race.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that made it across the various ponds.
Yeah, yeah, we had that in ours.
I think, I mean, you probably both got it from Britain because I think we invented the spoon.
But what came first, the spoon or the egg?
Oh, that's a good question.
And there are spoon millionaires. Anybody else remember that? Yeah.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I was
Bruce, does Matt know it?
I don't know.
I just imagine Scrooge McDuck diving into a vat of spoons.
No, it's Bruce McCullough as that little kid on Kids in the Hall.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah. He's talking about Britain. He says in England, you get one spoon when you're born, and if you lose a spoon, you die, you starve, and there are spoon millionaires.
I was just imagining that the British invented spooning, which I thought would be weird.
That could be it, too.
Yeah. So, Beck, here's the deal, all right? First of all, let's... No.
We're going to sacrifice you. This isn't a podcast. This is a cult. I knew it. This always happens to me. I'm always asked to guest on shows, and then halfway through, they're like, have you heard of the Church of the Latter-day Saints?
That'd be a hilarious way for cults is like to offer you as a podcast guest, and then you're locked in and they're recording, and that's when they pitch it.
We'll get them in saying it's science. We'll get the non-believers.
What I was going to ask you is we never figured out this geography issue earlier. So you're from Australia?
Yes, I've been living in the UK for 16 years, I'm currently...
But you're currently in
I'm
America.
Currently in LA. Normally staying just around the corner from Matt, but he said that you guys record on this. So then I had to move further away from Matt to a friend's house who's got good recording equipment.
Okay.
Oh. All right.
And also because I've got this thing where I'm trying not to be around Matt ever.
Yeah, it's understandable. Like, you know, even being close to me vocally right now is a bit of a stretch for people. But the fact that... Yeah, if you have to be on a podcast with me for an hour and then like, oh god, you just want to move. You just want to move to several three words away.
Yeah.
At the very least.
Speaking of which, I found the one that I was trying to find, which is the dumbest, but entered Groovy Conundrum. If you want to click on that and make sure you see the map view of what I'm sending you to.
Oh, I've already closed the website. Can you just tell us?
No. Like in the show notes, I just dropped you a link. If you click on that.
Oh, okay.
Entered Groovy Conundrum. It's the most juvenile thing I could possibly send you to. Do satellite view and zoom out a bit.
Zoom out. Oh, nice.
That is a Groovy Australia, conundrum.
Australia adjacent. It's
So that's a real... what is this island called?
I know.
I'm surprised that I haven't come across this. I've been to New... This is just off of New Caledonia. For the listeners, seeing as this is a highly audio medium.
Sure.
Yeah, so guys, it's everyone listening, it's Andy has sent us to an island.
Oh, I'm there now. Okay.
It's an island that looks like a dick.
Yes. with balls.
With testicles.
Sort of a cock and balls situation. Very interesting.
You've all entered a Groovy Conundrum here because now we have to talk about it. And
I am such... I love hiding dick and balls and stuff. Like, I mean, like pictures, not... not
like groceries.
Secreted on your person,
Not like a Jeffrey Dahmer situation. But you'll draw them?
I had a poster one year or like a publicity shot where I was wearing I'm sort of looking over a set of very shiny sunglasses. And if you look at the sunglasses, I mean, if people Google Beck Hill, eventually they'll find this photo. And if you look in the sunglasses, you'll notice that I've got someone holding a post-it with a cock and balls that I've drawn on it just reflected. But it's quite like you have to really be looking for it. But there's been several. I also do stand up for kids, and there's been several instances where I've been on the lineup for a family friendly show, and they've used that image, and I've had to contact them, going, maybe not that one, maybe don't put that one on there.
Oh yeah,
nice.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's like there are very few things that that are always funny. You know what I mean? And I think a well placed like cock and balls. Is like will always make me laugh.
What's a non well placed cock and balls?
Well, back to groceries.
Yeah, I mean there could be somewhere where it's like not as
like
funny.
On someone's coffin. Like,
no,
if someone put it on my coffin, I'd be well happy.
I want my coffin to have a glory hole, like an unexplained. like just a hole kind of where my mouth is, and it's never explained, and people are at the funeral. I think that'd be fantastic. But
so
yeah.
I like how it's where your mouth is. It's not like above your crotch. It's one. You're
no, it's for
it's
me
not
to
a
do
glory
the,
hole for
it's
you.
It's for me to do the blowing. It's sort of a solemn, kind of a sad glory hole. I just mean like if you're at a doctor's office and there's a poster of a. Did I tell you guys this? The sort of the thing where, so when I was doing radiation stuff, Beck, I had a touch of the cancer sometime back, and when I was doing radiation stuff for the touch of the cancer, it was colon cancer, right? So I had to put my junk, my stuff, in this thing called the clamshell, it's like a lead ball with like a slit for your junk,
right?
So it doesn't fry
like
your
uncomfortable
stuff, right?
Fleshlight.
Sort of, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Cool.
But like a Superman proof on it one.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it looked very medieval. It's like, it blew my mind. That's the height of the technology, is this like medieval torture device. But I had, so you do radiation every day for like a month. So you kind of get to know the staff. And there were always two different attending physicians. And it was so funny to me because they were both 100% opposite in their speech. So like, one of them was very sort of frat guy, but would use proper genital language. So he was like,
like bro.
He'd be like, no, he'd be like, okay, bro. So I'm going to need you to lay down flat. Okay. And you're going to want to put your penis and scrotum in this right here. Okay. And then scooch that anus over so we can get a good measurement on this. Okay. So go ahead and just scooch your anus. And then the other guy was like very like calming pilot, but then used street terms. So he'd be like, okay, and I just need you to, you're going to get in the prone position and put your cock and balls in this right here. And then just if you could try to scooch over your butthole.
Yeah.
And we can, and it was like the weirdest, and I was way more creeped out by the second guy.
Yeah. If he'd said Willy, yeah. Can you just
voice
move your
you just
Willy?
Did that was good. Sorry, what you say about
if he just said like, could you move your Willy just over to the, like.
Every new doctor who comes in the room has to, it's like the Kate McKinnon alien abduction sketch. It's just excuses to find more euphemisms for genitalia.
right. And if you could put your bait and tackle in the, next to your wiener, if you could pop your wiener.
And we're just going to do everything we can to avoid any of the radiation hitting Mr. Happy here.
Yeah, it was weird. Because he was also that one sort of oncologist I know. I think he used words like that because he also did pediatric. He like worked at the Children's Hospital too. So he was
really impressed with yours.
No, he wasn't. No, unfortunately, he was not. He was too comfortable, really. that's very funny.
Beck, we're a good 20 minutes into the episode. We still haven't got around to asking the question we ask all, I guess, before we get into stories, which is, what, if anything, is your background in science? And I think I know some of the answers to this, but that's ranged from people liking or hating classes as kids to blowing stuff up in the woods with their friends to producing and hosting a show that I was on a month ago to whatever.
Yeah. I have no background in terms of education. Like, in high school, you didn't have to do a science subject in your final year of high school if you did computer science, which I'm using quotation marks for, because computer science was how to use a computer, which we'd all learnt and taught ourselves to do. And it was just teachers catching up on how to do them. So, you know, we're using like floppy disks and all this sort of stuff while teachers are like, I'm not sure how you're going to save this. It's a big file. Because if you remember, floppy disks were high in memory at the time. 14 megabytes. Wow. So.
Right. So that's the 3.5-inch floppy. That was.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Which is coincidentally what my doctor refers to my penis as.
Yes. Yes. No, I've even over here in the States, we've all heard about you.
Yes. Those what three words, you don't want to know where they go.
yeah, it's we call her Rubenesque, but it's kind of like the sandwich.
Yeah.
I'll see myself out. So, yeah, computer science class, big files.
That, yeah, that was the most. And then I just sort of avoided it. And wasn't really until my 30s that I was living in the UK, that I've always been a fan of sci-fi. I love sci-fi. There's a British show called Red Dwarf, which I grew up watching since I was like seven. And I've just always really enjoyed it. And I decided I wanted to write a sci-fi sitcom. And so I started to do research more into that, and then that got me really into space. And then I reconnected with a guy called Matt Parker, who's a mathematician. He goes by Stand Up Maths on YouTube. He's a fellow Aussie who's now based in the UK, and he's in a group called Festival of the Spoken Nerd, and they do science-based comedy stuff together. And they started running a night called An Evening of Unnecessary Detail. And I reconnected with him just because I was researching this. His wife's an astrophysicist, like all this sort of stuff. And then he was like, hey, you should come do this show. And I was like, well, I don't know anything about science. I'm just a big idiot. And he was like, well, no, just, you know, find a topic that interests you and look into it in unnecessary detail. So my first talk was how the Australian chip twisties are made, which are kind of like crunchy Cheetos, but taste better. And there ended up being a 20-minute Q&A afterwards, which I was not expecting. And then after that, I kind of got hooked on doing deep dives in stuff. And now Matt and I have a podcast called A Problem Squared, where we solve people's problems. And I've done an evening of unnecessary detail in places all around the world, including with Matt Kirshen a couple of months ago.
And what,
I like
how
it's a Matt Kirshen, just in case you weren't sure.
Which
well, there's two Matts involved here. So it is. I did appreciate the killing of any ambiguity.
Thank you.
What was
you
the
pick,
topic
yeah,
on Matt Kirshen? What was the deep dive on yours?
What did I did, because I wasn't, I actually did a kind of like overview of here's 10 things I've learned from writing on a bunch of science shows over the last 3 years. So it was a whole assortment, because as has been mentioned on the show a bunch of times, Andy and I have worked on a multitude of weird science shows recently.
Yeah, it went down really well.
And it was really fun. Thanks. It was including like a brief overview of how automatic cow milking machines work, and slot machines at casinos, and
very similar actually. That we very had similar that. Mechanics for both of them.
Very similar. Very similar. In fact, quite often, you know, they set off to design one and then realize they've really kind of this is much more. I think this is for the casino. Yeah. This one now, because the other attachment is all wrong. It's more of a footstool now and a beer holder. So I think let's send this one to Bally's. And in the meantime, that
the farmers
yeah,
are
that
like
slot machine jackpot. That seems to be,
yeah.
That slot machine that seems to be attaching to people's teats. Let's send that to the farms.
I looking at the site here, Steve Mould. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of his various, you know, I'm assuming he's on TikTok, but I'm seeing him on Instagram. All of his science content online is like pretty top notch. I think, Matt, you've seen his stuff, right?
Yeah, I know all of those guys. I've done their show. And in fact, I don't remember why it fell through. They wrote a book recently. The other two, Helen and Steve, wrote a book about a couple of years ago. We were going to have them on the show, and I think logistics didn't work out. But we'll rectify that at some point, because we should have them back, because they're great.
Well, they're very, very busy
people.
Yeah,
he reminds me.
Whereas I'm not.
Yeah, it would appear that way.
Yeah, we got you super easy.
The Element in the Room, that was it. I was trying to remember the name of the book, The Element in the Room.
There we go. Should we get onto some stories? Because we've got some fun.
Yeah, we should get onto some stories, but I still don't have access to the emails. So did I have any suitors? Have I had any suitors?
Oh, since you declared your eligibility last week?
Mm-hmm, yeah, have I had suitors?
Let's assume, yeah, loads,
I've crashed
probably.
The email,
I haven't,
right?
I haven't looked properly yet. But
crash the inbox?
Let's see.
Good to
just Justin Broad, I believe, is just looking through our email. We love you, Justin. No, I'm just saying. When you search that label in my inbox, that is not a majority of, but a plurality of emails. And
well,
we always appreciate the story suggestions.
No, if anyone did write into suit, that would be a big surprise. You know what else is a big surprise, guys?
What's that?
Expired cans of salmon from decades ago have revealed a big surprise.
Ooh, yeah, okay. Heather Robinson sent in this story.
Yeah, canned salmon.
Sam Vimes. Sam Vimes also sent in this story. Look at you guys both sending it in.
Well, it's a crazy story. Canned salmon are the unlikely heroes of an accidental back-of-the-pantry natural history museum with decades of Alaskan marine ecology preserved in brine and tin. You're getting very poetic with the opening...
Yeah, Science Alert is really coming through here with...
I think really canned salmon are headlining at Coachella this weekend, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, man, did you guys see the... that shit with Grimes?
I was just poor Grimes. She was DJing and she's not a good DJ? Is that what it was?
Right, correct. Yes, that's what happened. But then it was the contempt. It was the so what happened, guys, is all the songs were at double tempo. It was
that's
a shit
like
show.
The musical version of the smoothing on the TV.
Yeah,
right. And she paused and. First, she like blamed her team, but she said to the crowd, she goes, "So this is actually happening." But the thing to me that made it very weird was she gave this big speech about why it's happening.
No,
yeah, and it's horrible, man. She's going, "I'm working with very, very complicated technology here, and it's like, but it's this program called Record Box. It's like, no, you're not.
The easiest. Yeah.
You're not. There's a button that says 2X, and you have it clicked. And you need to fucking unclick it. But you don't know that because you didn't practice for the, and you're getting $250,000 for this appearance. God. Fuck off. And anyway, speaking of parasites, guys, they can tell us a lot about an ecosystem because they're usually up in the business of several species. I don't like that writing. But unless they cause some major problem to humans, historically we haven't paid them much attention. That's a problem for parasite ecologists like Natalie Mastick and Chelsea Wood from the University of Washington. And just to be clear, guys, these are ecologists that study parasites. These are human beings. These are not parasite ecologists.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So Natalie and Chelsea are both humans that study parasites. Okay?
They're a little clingy, but yes.
They've been searching for a way to retroactively track the effects parasites had on Pacific Northwestern marine mammals. So when Wood got a call from Seattle Seafood Products Association asking if she'd be interested in taking boxes of dusty old expired cans of salmon dating back to the 1970s off their hands, her answer was unequivocally yes. The cans have been set aside for decades as part of the association's quality control process, but in the hands of the ecologists, they became an archive of excellently preserved specimens, not of salmon, but of worms.
Ew.
Yeah. Well,
I've heard that one before.
The idea of worms... While the idea of worms in your canned fish is a bit of a stomach turning, that's a hell of a pickup line.
You like worms in your can?
You like worms in your can? It'll be a bit of a stomach turning if you're asking me. You know, these roughly 1 centimeter long marine parasites, anisakids, they're called anisakids. They're harmless to humans when killed during the canning process. So everyone assumes that worms in your salmon is a sign that things have gone awry, says Wood.
It's the origin of this saying, worms in your salmon. Yeah.
I don't want to put worms in your salmon, but.
But the anisakid life cycle integrates many components of the food web. I see their presence as a signal that the fish on your plate came from a healthy ecosystem. Anisakids.
Real glasses half full. Yeah.
Real glasses half full. It's very optimistic. They enter the food web when they're eaten by krill, which in turn are eaten by larger species. This is how they end up in the salmon and eventually the intestines of marine mammals, where the worms complete their life cycle by
reproducing. I think then they end up in an old woman who swallowed a fly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's
yeah.
The way they test it.
Their eggs are excreted into the ocean by the mammal, and the cycle begins again. If the host is not present, marine mammals, for example, anisakids can't complete their life cycle and their numbers will drop. The 178 tin cans in the archive contained 4 different salmon species caught in the Gulf of Alaska and Bristol Bay across a 42-year period. That's 1979 to 2021. And they included 42 cans of chum, 22 coho, 62 pink salmon, and 52 sockeye. Although the techniques used to preserve the salmon do not, thankfully, keep the worms in pristine condition, the researchers were able to dissect the fillets and calculate the number of worms per gram of salmon. Mm-hmm. Yep. And you got to check that WPG. Yeah. That's the worms per gram. Well-known measurement. They found worms had increased over time in chum and pink salmon, but not in sockeye or coho. So, you know, right what we all assumed.
I could have told you that for free.
And, yep. Seeing that their numbers rise over time, as we did with the pink and the chum salmon, that indicates these parasites were able to find all the right hosts and reproduce. That could indicate a stable or recovering ecosystem with enough of the right hosts for anisakids. But it's harder to explain the stable levels of worms in coho and sockeye, right? Especially since the canning process made it difficult to identify the specific species of anisakids.
They need more co-hosts, am I right? Well,
mm-hmm. Yep, there it is.
Bye. Just logging off now.
though we're confident in our identification to the family level, we could not identify them at the species level, the authors write. So it's possible that parasites of increasing species tend to infect pink and chum salmon, while parasites of a stable species tend to infect the coho and the sockeye. Mastic and colleagues think this novel approach, dusty old cans turned into an ecological archive, could fuel many more scientific discoveries. It seems they've opened quite a can.
Wow, that's awesome.
Oh, is it? Oh, they've just been waiting for that. It's just
you know, none of that actually happened. It was just to get to the punchline.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, the entire thing was reverse engineered. Should I volunteer? I've got like a can of anthrax. I don't know if that's of use to researchers.
Why do you have a can
it's
of
like
anthrax?
Old. Just like,
he just hasn't
yeah,
finished
just like
it
an
yet.
Old, I don't know. It's just like, yeah.
Yeah, who can really eat in one meal?
He's waiting for a special occasion.
Wow. Exercising portion control when it comes to pathogens. And, yeah.
Man, Andy, do you remember when we cleaned out the pantry and fridge at the old place where we lived?
Oh, vaguely. Actually, I was going through old paperwork and I found the Tony Hawk contract that I stole from the garage just because it was a cool little time capsule thing.
We should have stolen that electric piano. That's what we should have stolen.
Yeah, there was so much in that. Yeah, because our landlord was dating Tony Hawk's mom in the 80s, so Tony Hawk spent a lot of time in his teen years in the house that Jesse and I rented a room in, and there was a sticker on the sliding glass door from a 1986 skate tournament that was definitely put on there in 1986. Mm. Like, no one had ever taken it off. And I have a letter from his lawyer. It's the first contract he signed with an endorsement deal in 1988.
So does that mean you now own him?
Yeah. I own Tony Hawk.
Yep, you do.
Yeah.
Well, when I...
Unless you can find that contract and rip it up or burn it, then technically Andy can actually control his every movement.
Yeah, it's like a genie.
I know you're imagining a wonderful house full of professional skaters and such, but we actually had quite a rat problem. So I cleaned out the pantry one time, and I found some hot sauce that expired in the 1960s.
No, you did not.
Yes,
did you eat it?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Obviously.
Was it still hot?
Yeah. I didn't even know they had best before dates in the 60s.
I thought you were going to say hot sauce.
This hot sauce did. It was good until like 67 or something.
That's amazing. That house, it was disgusting. It was a rat in my closet. It would come out and take nibbles of things. And
yeah,
everyone
man.
Has a rat in their closet.
Yeah.
Well, so that's kind of gross, this salmon story, though.
So, again, this salmon, they're saying, like, as soon as you can it, the worms die. It's just like, it's like Pompeii, where it's like, this is like a time capsule frozen. And so it's not as if the numbers of worms are increasing once it's canned. It's just saying, because we have this old ship, we have all these samples that were, like, frozen in time at this instant.
I assume they can compare it to current species of salmon. So like if you have a can from a 1979 coho versus a coho now, you know, what are the levels of wormage? The worms per gram, the WPG.
Right, but what it's saying, they found worms had increased over time in chum and pink salmon. They mean comparing a can from
I don't think it means they weren't
Y
breeding
year.
In the
right.
Yeah. But I didn't know that there were worms in there at all. It's gross.
Or that you're supposed to just be okay with that.
Yeah.
Now I'm just going to look at all my salmon differently.
Yeah.
Also, the color of the salmon is stomach turning. All these pictures are just off-white, yellowy colors.
Mm.
Sorry. Anyway, thank you, multiple listeners, for sending us that.
For making us feel pretty gross. Can of worms.
No, it's nice. Yeah, what do we got?
Should we do a cool, like a nice story about ghost particles that was tweeted at us by Jamie?
Ghost particles.
Ghost particles. Yeah, I don't even know what
Jamie
this is.
D. This is, I always like it when we have a story about sort of any kind of particle physics, because it really, really flags up the limits of my knowledge. I'll be like, yeah, so I guess that's what that is. So this BBC article says, some physicists have long suspected that the mysterious ghost particles in the world around us could greatly advance our understanding of the true nature of the universe. Now scientists think they found a way to prove whether or not they exist. Europe's Centre for Particle Research, CERN, has approved an experiment designed to find evidence for them. The new instrument will be 1,000 times more sensitive to such particles than previous devices. It'll smash particles into a hard surface to detect them instead of against each other, like in the Large Hadron Collider, which is also at CERN. So
they also they have a collider, but also a smasher?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess they got a separate smasher
room?
And a collider.
Yeah, they got a smasher and a... Wow.
So let's find out what these particles are. The current theory of particle physics is called the Standard Model. It says that everything in the universe is made up of a family of 17 particles, well-known ones like the electron and the Higgs boson, as well as lesser-known but wonderfully named charm quark, tau neutrino, and gluon. Some are mixed up in different combinations to make up the larger but still incredibly small particles that make up the world around us, as well as the stars and galaxies we see in space, while others are involved in the forces of nature. But there is a problem. Astronomers have noticed things in the heavens, the way the galaxies move, for example, that strongly suggests that all we can observe makes up just 5% of the universe. Okay, so we're into dark matter and dark energy stuff. Some or even all of the rest of the universe could be made up of the ghost or hidden particles. They are thought to be phantom doppelgangers of the 17 particles of the Standard Model. And if they exist, they're really hard to detect because they rarely interact with the world we know. Like ghosts, they pass straight through everything, can't be detected by any earthly device, except for if you've got those two metal coils that you hold and really believe.
Mm-hmm. And if you sometimes see them going around in little Victorian boy clothes.
Yes, that's exactly it. It does say that all of these particles are still wearing whatever they died in. So
always Victorians. There's no caveman ghosts.
It's the peak era for... You're right. Why don't we get... That's very strange. Maybe everyone just gets... Maybe that's the uniform of the heavens, and it just so happened that it was in Earth, on Earth for a little while.
Yeah, then
there.
Up in heaven, they're like, geez, like years ago. This is surreal. You know, look at this. They're actually dressing how we do it.
Victorians really nailed
weird.
It. Yeah. They're like, are they taking a piss? Like, what's going on here?
Did everyone on Earth die? No, it's just their cyclical fashion. Okay, cool.
They were bound to hit it eventually. Yeah, you're just trying enough fashions. Yeah. There's going to be...
Phantom Doppelganger is a great novel, by the way.
Is that a children's
chapter? Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I forgot what... Yeah.
So the theory is that these ghost particles can very rarely disintegrate into Standard Model particles, and these can be picked up by detectors. The new instrument increases the chance of detecting these disintegrations by greatly increasing the number of collisions. Instead of colliding particles together, which most current experiments do, the search for hidden particles, or SHIP, will crash them into a big block of material. This means that all the particles are smashed into smaller bits rather than some of them. The diagram below shows why this fixed target approach is much more effective. There's a diagram. We'll link to the article in the show notes like we always do. Okay.
So I know Bruce Banner was a scientist. Is that why he's like so into smashing stuff when he's the Hulk? Like, it's still the scientist within him who's like, science is just smashing stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. That's, well, until recently, he used to say, Hulk collide. And then now he started doing more smashing, you know, with these new experiments. Mm-hmm.
Okay, this does make sense. So I guess you're getting like half the energy, but significantly more collisions. The idea is, if particles are colliding with each other in bunches and accelerators, they're being like fired at each other at streams, there is only a 1 in a billion chance they'll actually hit each other. The rest of the time, they just like go put. There's near. It's a billion near misses.
Yeah, it's like if we threw sprinkles at each other, hoping that the sprinkles would all hit each other in the middle and then just fall down. I don't know why I chose sprinkles, not sand or something.
You were very specific. Maybe, are you hungry? Do you fancy an ice cream after this? We'll get you an ice cream. We'll DoorDash you an ice cream.
Well, I mean, imagine two cars in a massive parking lot driving from opposite ends towards each other. They, you know, the chances of them hitting without trying to, they're just driving.
I think we need more analogies here. Imagine two t-shirt cannons across each other from in a stadium.
Mm-hmm. Two t-shirt cannons is good. Yep.
Have they tried using what three words to navigate the route of the particles?
Thank you.
There you
then
go.
Then you have the straightest.
There you go. Shot. Although I didn't know that. I thought particle accelerators could actually control the trajectory of individual particles to the point that they didn't have to worry about the one in a billionness. I thought it actually could have, like, just two particles hit. I thought we had that level of
control
with magnets and stuff.
I think she was just telling you that to get out of it, not her feelings.
I could be wrong about this, but I think we're running into sort of Heisenberg territory where we can't know exactly where the particles are so tiny, we can't know exactly where they are, and we can't exactly get them in a specific place. So yeah, I think you're going to get some collisions because they fire them in batches, but instead they're just whacking them in a massive block of something.
Mm-hmm.
And this specially adapted equipment. So it says in these with normal experiments like the Large Hadron Collider, for example, new particles can be detected up to a meter from the collision, but the ghost particles can remain invisible and travel several tens or even hundreds of meters before they disintegrate and reveal themselves. So ship detectors are placed much further away. Professor Mitesh Patel of Imperial College described the new approach as ingenious. He says, "What really appeals to me about the experiment is these particles are right around under our noses, but we've never been able to see them because of the way they interact, or rather the way they don't interact. We are explorers, and we believe we can see something interesting in this new terrain, so we have to take a look." So this will be built within existing facilities at CERN, according to a physicist there, Claudia Adida, who says, "We will try and make use of an existing cavern and infrastructure and parts that we will try and reuse as much as possible. And what we'll have is a facility that will help us search for this hidden sector which has not been seen before."
But what if that cavern itself just happened to already be haunted? How will they know if the particles came from their experiment, or it's just, you know,
right? Yeah,
indigenous to the cave.
That's a risk, and if this can travel so far as well, I mean, it could also be, this could be like a collider thousands of miles away that's haunted instead,
right?
Mm.
So they can't see these particles because of the way they don't interact, which.
Exactly.
So I guess is a bit like knowing that there are people on 4chan, but you never see them in real life because they would never leave the house.
Right.
That's exactly it.
These are definitely
you can tempt them out by smashing them into a block of something at high speed.
Yeah, these are definitely incel particles. These are
So they just, if we're lucky, they just disintegrate into standard model particles that we know were originally ghost particles. Am I saying this right?
Yeah, I think that's a good that's a good explanation. I think a lot of the stuff, a lot of the current can't detect. I mean, we don't have measurement tools to detect a lot of the current models that we have for things like do you guys ever get like embarrassed about current theories?
Well, I mean, for one thing, this article still references dark matter, which we didn't even go into depth on this, but a few weeks ago, there's like a bunch of stories and studies about how maybe dark matter is totally wrong and doesn't exist.
Right, but I mean, even the name dark matter has such a, like, the sun moves on a turtle's back across the sky.
Right,
it's got such an ancient, those fucking idiots vibe that I'm a bit embarrassed. They thought we had dark matter. And it's like, I don't want to be made fun of in 2,000 years.
It sounds like the humors or something.
Yeah, and ghost particles isn't much better.
Right. They're checking for ghost particles. And it's like, man, this is fucking embarrassing.
But it's at least like admitting, we're calling it that because we don't know. Like, we're at least admitting we don't know, as opposed to saying this is definitely what this thing is.
I know all the particles. Every morning I get up and do a full particle check in my house. They're talking about they can't find all the particles. I know where all the particles are.
You're like, hang on, this particle's being moved. I haven't touched it. Well, someone has. Mm-hmm. Must have been.
Right. Sometimes I'll have a weird dream and I'll wake up and I'll be like, oh, thank God it was just a dream. But then there's extra particles in my bed.
When something strange, man, in your bed.
Yeah. Okay, bro, you're going to want to put your dark part, you're going to want to put your particles and your dark matter into this clamshell.
Okay, bro. Scoot your penis up there, bro.
BBC technology site, by the way, which we were on before, has linked to a Stonehenge project. I can't resist a Stonehenge story.
Of course, who can?
Sorry, I can't resist research exploring a possible moon connection. Big picture of the moon. It's been a big week or two for the moon.
Yeah,
with an eclipse and everything.
Okay, so do we still not know what Stonehenge is all about?
Thought you're gonna say what the moon is made of.
No. Stonehenge. Like, do we still not know the?
Like its backstory, the
Druids
stuff?
I think it's pretty clearly like a, but it aligns with some celestial events, so it's probably just some
but
ceremonial
isn't that a
structure.
Broken clock, right twice a day thing. Like, here's my, like, if it's gonna, yeah, it's a structure. It's gonna line up with some stuff.
Like, no, but I think things line up on solstices or equinoxes or whatever, right? Don't they? I'm pretty sure.
I feel just, like in the future, someone's going to be like, why did they put this plastic flamingo here in the yard?
Exactly. That's my
point.
Just,
is that,
like,
looks good.
Right. It's like we tend to think with archaeology that everything we find must have been a major religious something. Like, so it'd be like, oh, this, you know, we found this buried city in Mesopotamia and they worshipped frogs, and it's just because one guy wanted a fucking frog mask. He thought frogs were cool, and then they find this frog mask and they're like, they must have worshipped frogs.
Yeah, this could just be like someone bought one henge because they thought, fuck, this looks cool, and then all of his friends just like, oh, he's really into henges.
Yeah,
just keeps buying him more henges for his birthday.
And surely there were henges made of other I mean, this is Stonehenge.
Well, the stone just would have lasted longer,
like,
than the other henges.
I bet there were wood hinges and things.
Yeah,
and
they've discovered wood hinges.
There was a straw one. The wolf blew down at least two of
the straw hinges. Yeah.
So this.
By the way, I'm seeing that the heel stone and the central sarsen stone align with the sunrise on the summer solstice and the sunset of the winter solstice. So that's nothing.
Right, and then they're investigating whether Stonehenge aligns with the positions of the moon as well as the sun. Mm. English Heritage and experts from other organizations are studying the connection between the ancient monument and a major lunar standstill, which happens every 18.6 years. The term refers to the point when moonrise and moonset are furthest apart along the horizon, and the next takes place in 2024 to 25. The theory is that these lunar movements may have been noticed in the early phase of Stonehenge and gone on to influence its later design. Due to major lunar standstills occurring relatively infrequently, academics have jumped at the chance to study it. So there's experts from the universities of Oxford, Leicester and Bournemouth, as well as the Royal Astronomical Society. And someone from Bournemouth, Dr. Fabio Silva, says, so we could be talking about a generational event that people might have come to Wilshire for. We'll never be able to prove this, but the greater understanding we can get of these movements in the moon, the stronger the argument
will be. I reckon these are points where they would have, like, celebrations for, like, solstices and that sort of thing. So it's when everyone's getting drunk. And I don't think there's any coincidence that something weird happened when a bunch of people were probably getting drunk.
Yeah, right? And this is, like, well before social media, so they probably, like, had to entertain themselves in other ways. So they had a lot of time to be.
You've never gotten drunk and dragged a big rock
massive
home?
Stuff.
No.
I mean, I guess it's like, the traffic cone of its day.
I don't know if you guys have ever partied with druids, but they go pretty hard. Yeah.
I'm looking at EnglishHeritage.org.uk midwinter celebrations at the time of Stonehenge, and they got a good artist rendering of a family rolling up like this is the Coachella of the prehistoric world. They're bringing the baby. It doesn't even have any ear protection. Come on, it's going to get loud at Stonehenge.
Yeah, don't they know that canned tuna is playing there?
Opening for Grimes.
Yeah.
She's still there. She's
also, why does Grimes... Grimes doesn't need the paycheck. She's got Elon alimony for the rest of her life.
Elon
right?
alimony supporting canned tuna, by the way.
They're all...
canned salmon.
Right. Elon
yes, alimony. Yes, nice.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know what's going on. Her backgrounds were all like weird AI art. Like it's just, I don't know what. I don't know.
It was AI art. What, like the Willy Wonka experience?
Sort of. Yeah, sort of. That's wound. It wound up being a very Glasgow sort of Coachella set. Yeah.
Which they're about to do, by the way, in LA. Are we aware of this?
Yes.
I bet they'll be able to get some... over the sad Oompa Loompa is being shipped,
shipped
over.
Not flying, shipped.
Which I think
stands for standard Hydron something collider. I can't remember what it stood for in the article we were talking about. I was trying to bring it back.
Right. Oh, I'm just trying to picture whether I bet when
search
they
for
do this, they're going to have some like.
Sorry, it's bugging me.
I bet they're going to have some like pretty big name people for the Wonka thing. It just reminds me of like the Hell House thing that was going on in LA where they were redoing like.
Yeah, it's one of the first things I did in LA.
You actually performed in it or went to?
Yeah, I was roving rotating cast member.
Amazing.
On various days. But yeah, it was organized by friend of the show, Maggie Rowe created it.
Oh, that's right. But they got some like pretty big name comics.
Absolutely.
Right?
And Matt.
Yeah.
Me. Including in that. But I could picture like Patton Oswalt playing the unknown at the Wonka thing, you know. That's what it is. Who lives in the wall, right? The unknown.
Yeah, that's a shoo-in. Yeah. That's an easy piece of casting right there.
Yeah. I will definitely go to that.
But they're bringing
that's
over the same Oompa Loompa, you say?
Yeah, they're bringing over the sad Oompa Loompa from the one.
Wow. Yeah.
It's
but not the Wonka guy.
No, not the Wonka guy. Because I think there was a little bit of a milkshake ducking that happened.
Oh yeah.
Him.
Oh okay.
What's a milkshake ducking?
Should we just send him the cartoon? I guess we have
it was a tweet
as well.
It was a tweet where they were saying like everybody's falling in love with Milkshake Duck, the adorable duck that drinks milkshakes, and then it was immediately quote tweeted saying we regret to inform you that Milkshake Duck is a racist.
A racist.
That's it. Yeah,
was the original one.
And so now that's the term for anything that has very quickly gone from being beloved to hated.
Yeah, it was sort of basically now for any time that someone's like, yeah, look at this funny thing, this great person from the internet, and then people very quickly do deep dives and then go like, oh, this person's maybe not.
This person maybe had a relationship with a teenager that he'd taught at some point.
Right.
So
I thought it was
cartoony
comic strippy thing, but it was just a tweet. I just posted.
Yeah, but it's from a guy who is also a cartoonist. Which is
pixelated, but
yeah, it's the one.
Yep,
it's interesting. So, like, but the Wonka experience is not really. Didn't they like use different names and stuff? Like, you know, when that script was released, it's not.
Oh, to be not exactly copyright.
To be like
fringy,
a free license.
Like it was just Willy's Chocolate Land or something. Or
yeah, it's not actually associated. Are you guys watching? Did you watch Shogun?
Not yet. No,
I'm. No, just in one episode in and enjoying it so far, but not far enough in to be able to probably contribute well enough to a conversation about it.
Well, the only thing I think is interesting, as this is a zero spoiler thing, but it's, you know, it's historical fiction, but very much based on a real time and a real interesting time in feudal Japan. But they changed all the names. So like, but I don't know why. Like, you're not going to get sued by feudal Japan. Does that make sense? Like, it was a real thing where, like, the Taiko dies, but the heir to the throne is too young, so there's five regents that are civil war fight, like, whatever. But that was a real thing. Like, it would be like, I don't know, like if you made like a historical World War II Saving Private Ryan type thing, but it was like calling him like Wilbur Churchill for no fucking reason. Does that make sense?
I'm not totally getting what you say. It's a needless, just why.
What I'm okay. So Shogun, the show Shogun, is about the formation of the Tokugawa shogunate. Right. It was a time it was a time in feudal Japan where it switched periods. That's what it's about, but it's historical fiction because it involves like this like white dude that shows up, and you know, it has like fake characters in it. But what I'm saying is the emperor at the time, all those were real people. Like, okay. They're real people that existed, but all the names are different in this show.
And you're just saying, why change on this? No downside to using the real.
Yeah, it's like they're, even if it's historical fiction, this is.
These are people who died several centuries ago. So are, there is, well, absolutely
right.
No.
These are people that it is about these people. It's not a parallel universe. It's, this is it. The year 1603. This civil war happened. These were the fucking generals. Like, these are real people, you know, and. Then they just changed, like, they changed Tokugawa to Torinaga. Like, it's, like, similar. Hmm. It's like they're trying to get around, like, getting sued by the Beatles.
Maybe
or
it's, like, a right, cultural respect thing.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I just...
Maybe they assume it's, like, it's such a... Not esoteric, but just it's a history that's probably so unknown to the viewers that they don't want to confuse viewers by combining... fact in fiction, where if it's like Abraham Lincoln vampire hunter, you're not worried someone's gonna be like, wait, so we did have a president who was a vampire hunter, didn't we? Like, you just know it's not, but with this they might take it all at face.
Well, I'm saying that, I'm trying to find, but the angle here is that they're going for completely fiction, which is not the case.
From a name standpoint, you're saying it is 100% fiction. It's just based on a lot of the events have parallels to real events, but because they have given them all fake names, you could call it all fiction.
Well, it's not just parallels to real events. It's like, it's a real, it'd be like, it's like making a movie about the Civil War, but changing Abe Lincoln's name or whatever. It's like, in the movie Lincoln, right? Which is like not a weird comedy. It's like a real film about Abraham Lincoln. They don't know what all those fucking conversations were, and they made them all up for the film, but they didn't change everyone's name.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. It's weird.
I follow.
I'm explaining this very poorly. I just mean it's just weird. It's like these are, I don't know, it's a pretty well known part of history, I think.
Someone will know. One of the listeners will definitely correct you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go off on the it just weirded me out. I was like, wait, that's not right. What? I don't know.
So ghost particles.
Never mind, man.
No, I'm with you. I can't muster the same enthusiasm you can, but I understand.
No, it just confused me. I was like, are they... But I, Beck, I really like your theory that maybe it's a respect thing.
Well, yeah, I don't know enough about Japanese culture. I don't know if, you know, obviously here the first thought is it's a litigious point, but maybe there's something that we're missing because we're... Yeah.
Of course, yeah. Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't know. I could be way up, you know. No idea. All right. This is a good talk, guys.
Yeah. Well, on that note, if anyone does know, email us. Email us probablyscience@gmail.com with your answers to that. And
no,
also
I,
any questions,
and,
comments,
and
clarifications.
So the question is, the very simple question, why did they change the names in Shogun? I know they made up characters. I know there's no Jonathan Blackthorne, whatever the fuck. I know that.
Yep.
I'm talking about the five regents. Why did they change their names?
I will. I'll message my brother-in-law about it. He might know. He's actually studies this stuff.
All right.
We'll see.
And I'll
we'll
use
see.
My
we'll
Hollywood
see.
Connections.
To oh, here we go. I literally Googled it, and it says. The author based each character on a historical figure, but changed their names in order to add further intrigue to the story.
Oh, it's for
intrigue it did.
It's for spookiness.
Intrigue.
What are you if not intrigued right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you not intrigued?
I mean, all right. Sure. I accept that explanation. I just think it's dumb. It's like.
I mean, definitely intrigued. We should wrap up the episode. Yes.
Yeah, we'll do it.
But not least because we've got we've got time issues here. But
yes.
Beck, where can our listeners find you and everything you do, including your podcast?
If you just look up Beck Hill Comedian on any platform or Be Chill Comedian, it reads the same. You can find me on any social media. My podcasts are A Problem Squared for anyone who's into maths or deep dives or anything like that. And if you really enjoyed someone getting angry about a TV show, I do another podcast called Enemy in Paris, where myself and Sam Kiefer watch Emily in Paris and tear apart each episode.
Nice. Go and check those out. Beck's the best. And also check out, we haven't even mentioned your many, many cool videos online with flip charts.
You can find those again across all platforms. Just look up Beck Hill on YouTube and you can see what I do when I'm not talking on a microphone.
Very, very cool. Go and do those. Listeners, you can find us on Twitter at Probably Science, individually at Jesse Case, at Andy T. Wood, and at Matt Kirshen. You can find us. ProbablyScience.com is also where we put all the stories we cover, the show notes, and also where our Patreon links are. We'll do an extra story for our Patreon patrons. You can email us ProbablyScience@gmail.com for questions, comments, clarifications, stories you'd like us to cover, explanations of feudal Japan and how it relates to television, and anything else. And Beck, thank you for joining us.
Don't forget 229 and beyond.
Yeah.
We're doing an awful job of plugging this. June 7th and 8th in 29 Palms, California. Go to 229 and beyond. That's TO29andBeyond.com for tickets and lodging. It will take place at Outpost 29, which is just soft opening this week, a great new beer garden, bar, restaurant in the heart of 29 Palms. It's going to be a blast. We hope to see a bunch of you out
awesome.
There.
Awesome.
Listeners, we will see you next time.
Bye.